Hello and welcome to the Investors Chronicle Companies and Markets Show. I'm John Heumann, editor of the Investors Chronicle. I'm joined today by Stephen Wilmot, Companies Editor.
Hi, John.
How are you doing?
Very well.
Excellent. And Graham Davis, the news editor this week.
Hello, John. Yes, I'm back this week.
I'm back.
Yes.
Good, good. And over in the control room, Dominic Toms. How are you doing, Dom?
Doing very well, thank you.
Good, yeah. Dom's been away for a little bit, dealing with a new arrival. How's it all going, Dom?
It's going well. Broken sleep,
easing
wet
into it now.
The usual.
Wonderful, wonderful. Okay, lots to talk about today. Not least the big news, news that made even the front page of the national newspapers, which is deflation.
Scary. Or is it?
Well, who knows? It's good deflation, isn't it? According to Mr. Osborne.
Apparently, yes, it would be.
But yeah, we'll come on to that. We've got lots of results this week, which Stephen's going to talk us through. Some biggies, M&S and Vodafone have reported this week. And
the big property companies.
Big property companies. So lots to talk about there. We'll come on to that in a minute. And most importantly and enjoyably of all, we're going to talk about beer, because there was a really quite interesting takeover this week. SAB Miller bought a little craft brewer called Meantime, which you know quite well, don't you, Dom?
I do know.
Yeah, you live, what, next door to the one of the brewers up there?
That is correct. Yes.
Wonderful. Wonderful, and you get lots of goodies at Christmas.
I did get lots of goodies.
Okay, let's start with deflation. Prices fell in April by a very small amount.
Marginally, by 0.1%.
So, huge outpouring of comment on this. As I said, lots of front pages. I think the Evening Standard even managed to write a headline, back to the 1960s with prices. Now, we're not quite there, because I think you could buy a house for about $2,500 in 1960. And actually, house prices rose this month in some regions, so not deflation in that particular asset, but general prices, the consumer price index, which measures the things we buy on an everyday basis, that fell by a fraction of a percent.
A fraction of a percent. This is the oil price effect, that big fall, and then obviously we've still got the supermarket wars going on, so food prices are falling. And really, you know, I don't think it was no great surprise to anyone. The surprising thing was the amount that people had to say about it.
Indeed. Most of which was exactly the same, which is that it's nothing to worry about, and it's going to be temporary.
And that was borne out by the retail sales figures for April, which were released today. Volumes are up strongly. So month on month, they rose 1.2% in April, which is pretty strong, stronger than consensus, which is at 0.4%. And on an annualized basis, that's 4.7%. So compared with April 2014, which is really quite strong.
We did have a nice, warm and sunny. Well, I did anyway. Yeah, with a nice, warm and sunny Easter in April.
Yes, that's right.
Always helps retail sales.
And that's buoyed clothing in particular. So yeah, there was a weather effect which would have brought forward some purchases from later in the spring. But it shows that the consumer recovery story is still on track, and that the deflation is, if anything, increasing. Volumes.
Indeed. So I guess the point that George Osborne, the Chancellor, was keen to make was that this isn't bad deflation, the kind that Japan is suffering, which is essentially a spiral where prices deflate and deflate and deflate, and it goes on for a very long time.
And people delay purchases.
So in expectation that the price will be cheap tomorrow or the month after or the month after that. This is good deflation.
For consumers, but not for companies.
Well, indeed, we'll come on to that. But it's good deflation for consumers, putting a little bit more money in people's pockets. Wages are starting to rise moderately.
So they say.
Oh, we had a little modest wage. Yeah, so this all means, in aggregate, a little bit more to spend, and that's happening. So good deflation, which is it's proving so.
Good for the politicians. Good for George Osborne. It proves he was right.
On that note, I thought it was quite interesting, this comparison with 1960, because, of course, that was when Harold Macmillan was in power. And it was Harold Macmillan who famously told Britons that they'd never had it so good. It was very much consumer
prosperity.
Consumer boom time. And it's interesting that, you know, we've got back to...
Yeah, it's funny.
I wouldn't want to like overstretch that comparison.
No. Funny enough, I was speaking to my mum and dad about the 1960s the other day, as you do, and they told me the 60s were a great time. You could walk out of school into a job. You know, it was that easy, and you could pick and choose who you went to work for. That's kind of not the case today. I mean, we talk about, you know, a great UK economic recovery story, but I mean, if you're a graduate, you don't walk out of school or university straight into a job these days. That doesn't happen. So I think, I don't know, it looks a bit smoke and mirrorsy to me, this whole thing, this whole discussion at the moment. And, you know, as you said, deflation, not necessarily good for companies.
I mean, so M&S had results yesterday, and actually they beat expectations and they were pretty good, but that was mainly to do with margin gains, better sourcing efficiency, not... the top line picture.
They're not selling any more pairs of pants, are they?
No, exactly.
Well, they're selling less, aren't they? So, I mean, clothing sales are not doing well at all.
For the year, there was a like-for-like decline of 3%. Now, one of the things that cheered the market was that they returned to growth, to like-for-like growth in the general merchandise, i.e. the clothing division, in the final quarter.
Mm.
But actually, I think the main reason why the market was excited wasn't that. It was to do with the margin. The margin was better than expected, and they said it would improve further.
They talked about share buyback as well, didn't they?
Yeah.
Market likes that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But there was a sense that they may have finally got a grip operationally.
Operationally.
Which has been an issue
exactly.
for a long time. Stock levels have been way out for quite a while.
And the online.
They may be getting a grip. And the online operation they've finally got it sorted out.
Because that was actually a drag on last year, given that that's the growth bit of the retail market.
So. Got to get that right. I've just bought something from Debenhams online, actually. Yes. It was a right pain.
Was it the trench coat?
It was a trench coat. Yeah, I'm on trend, mate.
Yeah,
but no, it was a pain. In my experience of shopping with Debenhams online today is that they have not got that right. We haven't heard from Debenhams yet.
No, we haven't.
Yeah.
Burberry, if you want to talk trench coat.
Not really.
No. Okay, moving swiftly
can't
on.
Can't afford Burberry trench coat.
I've just
bought a new car, so I can't afford Burberry trench coats.
Burberry did talk about some uncertainty in certain markets, and I think they were hinting at some of the Asian markets as well, because there is some concern growing about China at the moment, and that's still hanging around. Certainly, that's been one of their growth areas, Burberry's overseas, so...
Yeah,
keep an eye on that.
So China, I mean, the big economic picture is that there was a big outflow of capital from the Chinese market this month, which is
the figures
somewhat worrying.
It's all year so far, really. Money's been flowing out of China, which is normally the other way around. Trading, it's trading quite well, but I think there was a balance of payments deficit of $80 billion.
It's a funny one. The stock market's flying there as well still.
The stock market is absolutely flying, yes.
Yes.
It's difficult one to call.
Yeah.
It's always been difficult to call China, though, hasn't it? It's so opaque.
It seems to be getting worse, though. I mean, there's stimulus going on there, and there's property problems there in terms of residential property, and some of the figures are not looking great. I don't know. China makes me nervous.
Mm.
And China's important, you know,
hugely.
Globally. And actually, China... is a very important market for oil, and you know, this is why another reason I'm not convinced by the good deflation argument is that, you know, one of the reasons we have experienced this falling price in April is the oil price, as you say, and you know, and the weakening oil price is partly a supply thing, but it's also a demand thing, and demand has been weaker than it was expected to be, and you know, this is suggesting to me that we have not quite the global growth that we need. And Chris Thiele has talked to the magazine about secular stagnation. That's you know, it's a contentious theory, but you know, if we're there, then life gets very difficult for investors to find the returns they're looking for. So I'm not 100% convinced about good deflation. Anyway, talking of slowing growth, the US is looking a bit wobbly.
Yes, the first quarter GDP figures were. The sort of estimates so far haven't looked good, and Chris Thiele wrote in our news section this week that next week the Bureau of Economic Analysis is expected to actually report that the US economy shrank in the first quarter at a seasonally adjusted rate of about 1%, which might just, you know, worry the markets a little bit. It's not a great sign of, you know, it's not a good sign.
Yeah, well, I actually spoke to the chief investment officer up at Charles Schwab, a big US broker, a couple of weeks back, and they're quite comfortable with the US story at the moment. Now, you know, arguably, you could argue they're talking their own book. I mean, it's their market. But, you know, they pointed to the weather, which has been pretty bad over in the US in the first quarter, and there was a big ports dispute, industrial action over there, which had a serious impact on trade for a while. So, I mean, there are a number of issues which could have impinged upon US growth in the first quarter, which won't repeat.
Yeah, so that's it. Well, you need at least two quarters of these sort of figures to be sure. But if there is growth there, it's not certainly not as strong as it was last year.
Yeah, yeah.
And as strong as arguably it needs to be.
But then that's to be expected. As an economy recovers, you would expect the growth to start to moderate and at some point.
Yeah.
I guess the big question is, has it recovered enough for the interest rate rises everyone has been talking about for so long to actually happen?
I think they're kicking that can down the road as well now.
I think that can is going to be kicked down the road for some time everywhere, quite frankly, everywhere. And the ECB actually accelerated its bond purchasing program this week.
I mean, the green shoots appear to be showing more strongly in Europe. I mean, that's one thing. Yeah, that some of the European economies are picking up.
Mm.
Whether that can pick up the slack of a slowing US, who knows?
Yeah, and European recovery is good for the UK companies because it's a big trade partner of ours.
While we're still in the EU.
Well, we're still in it. We've got a couple of years left, at least. Actually, we don't generally talk about personal finance content on this podcast because the team there have their own podcast. But one of the features they've written this week is how you can tap into the European Recovery with funds. So I'm sure they'll talk about that when they record their podcast. If you believe and are confident that the European Recovery will continue, we've got some good ways to play it in the magazine this week. Okay, now, the moment we've all been waiting for, because we're going to talk about beer. One of my favourite subjects, and SAB Miller has bought Meantime. It's a really strange little deal, and I say little because it is a little deal in the grand scheme of SAB Miller, and yet, like deflation, seems to have attracted an amazing amount of press coverage. Why?
Oh, journalists like beer, John. A lot of them, shall I say.
And SAB is one of these companies which is not always easy to make colourful, even though it is a brewer.
I covered it for years. It is boring. Yeah.
And so I think journalists thought, oh, finally a story about SAB that is going to actually engage a kind of UK retail audience. So.
And I think the whole craft beer thing has been a big story globally, but in the UK especially, the craft breweries, the growth of those has been the sort of interesting story over the past few years, and this is another one. It's one of the biggest craft brewers that's now been being bought up by the big boys.
Well, it's big in the US as well, craft beer. Very, very big in the street there. And there has been a couple of deals where some of the large brewers have bought craft beer makers. I think, what's the company? Sharps makes Doombar. They got bought a few years back. Yep. And that's one of the biggest selling selling draft ales in the UK. But purists will argue that since Doombar was bought, since Sharps was bought, you know, the product has suffered. And I guess this is the thing that beer purists will be worried about when it comes to the SAB takeover of Meantime. You know, whether the big boys really can get involved in craft beer and keep it craft. Mark Robertson, who wrote the story, he points to the fact that SAB has said, no, we want to nurture these small brewers. We want to nurture this nascent industry. Robert describes it as nurturing companies in the same way that a lion might nurture a springbok.
Though, of course, SAB is the South African company. So.
It is. But, I mean, it's a huge global brewer. I mean, it's, you know, owns operations everywhere. It's a very dominant player here. I mean, Peroni, which is another of its it's long.
It's one of its premium brands, apparently.
And it's everywhere. Mm. It's everywhere. Mm. You know, so will they do the same to Meantime? Will they take a brand like that and improve distribution? I mean, it's interesting. It's interesting.
But at what point does a craft beer stop becoming a craft beer? You know,
I don't know.
What defines a craft beer?
I don't know. I think at this moment it might be a good time to find out what a craft beer is, because we're lucky enough to work next door to Borough Market, which has a fantastic little stall called Uto Beer. And Uto Beer is a connoisseur of craft ales.
Mm. Well, so there are other beer stalls available, John.
Yeah, but I like Uto Beer.
Did they give you a deal on these bottles?
No, they didn't. They didn't. Right, anyway, okay. Yeah, this is a bit of a departure, so we'll keep it brief. We might cut it out, actually, if it doesn't work. But anyway, so let's try the Meantime Chocolate Porter. Right. This is craft beer in action. Right. Oh, Christ. Trying not to spill it in the studio. What do we think of this? All right, go for it, chaps.
Poor Dominic can't have any.
I've given him something else. He's got a pale ale.
I've got the London pale ale. Oh, he looks quite happy.
And he's got a crate of the other one. I've got Yakima Red at home.
Yakima Red, yeah.
Right, cheers. Bottoms up, chat.
Cheers.
That's not bad.
Yum.
Yeah.
It's quite pleasant.
Malty.
Yeah, nice.
Okay. And you've also got a bottle of BrewDog there.
Oh, okay, let's try the BrewDog.
Well, I didn't know. I wasn't suggesting you open it. I was just going
to... No, do open it.
Yeah, no, let's open it. Honestly, you know, we're now combining gastronomy with finance. Gilly Goulden of the investing world. Right, this is a BrewDog special. Now, BrewDog is interesting too. What's happened with BrewDog this week?
Well, it's fiercely independent craft brewer.
A fiercely independent craft brewer. So Scottish, in fact. Yeah. As it happens.
That's why it's fierce.
And independent.
Well.
Right.
Yeah, they celebrated the first 5 million raised as part of their 25 million equity raising initiative.
They celebrated by dropping some stuffed fat cats over the city, apparently.
Sounds very BrewDog. Yeah. I think the last time they raised money, which they did their, I mean, it's crowdfunding.
Cheers.
Right. Mm. So this one is a BrewDog 5 a.m. red ale.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. I like that a lot, actually. Yeah. Okay.
And yeah, exactly. They dropped these fat cats over the City of London because, of course, they've not only have they not gone to the public market, i.e. the stock exchange, to raise equity, but they haven't gone to the supposedly disruptive players, the crowd funders,
yep.
Crowdcube and Cedars. So they've not only rejected the establishment, but also the, you know, the disruptors.
Yeah, it's interesting.
By raising money on their own equity for punks.
Yeah, but they raised some money before, and they did it. Yeah. It's their own platform. It's quite, it's really, really quite novel. I think the first time they raised money, they had punks essentially rampaging through the city, and it was quite a sight to behold. But it's a nice model.
I mean, well, it's fine if you've got the brand and you're able to capture people's attention. I mean, the idea that this is somehow anti-establishment is obviously a bit rich.
Well, the interesting thing about BrewDog has a tie-up with a company in a company over in America called the Anchor Brewing Company, San Francisco Brewer, which is one of the big craft brewers out there. There is involvement with in drinks industry guys who have built up and sold these businesses to the big boys. Yeah, you're right. Anti-establishment, yes.
To a point.
As
far as it raises publicity.
This is a money.
I mean, they've got some quite ambitious growth plans. There's 25 million that they want to raise in total. I think they're opening another 30 bars because they have their own bars as well.
Well, yeah, this is interesting.
And they also want to open a beer hotel, which I find a very interesting concept.
Oh,
a beer on tap in the bedroom.
I'm there. Right, okay. That's interesting because we wanted to talk about business models in the pubs industry.
Yes.
So BrewDog is taking a novel route, and we talked about this the other day. It's quite old-fashioned what it's doing. Own the distribution.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the fact they've got bars is harking back to a former era where brewers had their own pubs, and that model still exists to an extent, but the beer tie, which is what tied the brewers to their distribution networks loosely, is being unbound. Is that the right word for a tie? No, anyway, loosened.
Unbind a tie, yeah, sounds right.
Cut it, it's a bit easy to cut it.
Yeah,
that's true. The beer tie is being loosened by the parliamentarians. I wouldn't say it's being cut entirely because basically they've just given publicans basically the option. There's this market rent only option. They can opt to pay a market rent only, not a wet rent in the form of buying beer from their landlord.
Yeah,
it's a bit confusing because we often think of the landlord being the publican, but in this case, the landlord's the tenant. Anyway, so yeah, this was a bill that the coalition government were pushing through last summer, and then in November there was a surprise vote against the government by the House of Commons, where they voted to insert an amendment saying there should be this market rent only option, and then then the government accepted that the House had spoken, as I think Vince Cable put it, and now it's going through, and this caused like Enterprise Inn's shares to tumble 13%, I think it was, on the day. And they've recovered since, and actually last week they came out with a strategic review saying how they were actually going to deal with this issue, which was very interesting. And basically it looks like they're turning themselves into a more modern retailing business effectively, where they will either take the they'll either take the properties in-house, managing them directly,
yep.
Or they will have an arm's length arrangement with them where it will be like a commercial property arrangement where you effectively just lease on commercial terms a pub to someone.
So more like Mitchells and Butler, which owns or operates its own pubs.
That's managed. So yeah, Enterprise wants to do that with some of its pubs,
which is a sense good model. Yeah, but the best model.
Yeah, well, it means you have a lot more control.
Yeah,
but obviously it's quite you've got to set up a whole management infrastructure. You've got to employ people. Full time. It's really quite a different business model from being a landlord who also sells beer to your tenants.
So, but in terms of the property business that we're talking about here,
that's different.
It's a prop co-op type thing.
Yeah. So the managed is a bit different. That's just like being a retailer.
Yeah.
But then there's the property business, which is like being a retailer's landlord, and then it becomes an opco propco.
Yeah.
Was the jargon when this was raised years ago.
Years ago. Yeah. That never really happened, did it?
No, it never really happened. And the idea is that Enterprise Inns could float off a portion of its estate which is let on commercial terms as a real estate investment trust. I suppose this is the point I was making in my column this week was, you know, Enterprise Inn's shares trade at less than half of its book value. And that's partly because the book value has been subject to lots of impairments. But I mean, people, I don't think anyone would expect the value of its pubs to halve. But the other issue is obviously that they've had this dysfunctional, they've had this threat of regulation. They've had this dysfunctional business model, the beer tie, which hasn't really made them appeal to property investors because they don't the wet rent is a bit odd. And it hasn't really made them appeal to people who like retail companies because they don't have the control over their outlets that, and therefore sales that you'd expect of a retail company. So they've been neither fish nor fowl, and they haven't really appealed to investors at all. And this goes for Enterprise Inns and Punch Taverns, which is also a tied bar.
Which have both had terrible difficulties over the last few years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, debt, but also just the fact they haven't really been able to generate much growth out from their pubs. And I think one of the issues is that they don't have the control over their estate that the likes of Mitchells and Butler do, for example, Young's, which had results today. I think Enterprise, this strategic review from Enterprise does possibly, albeit in a very long time, pave the way for a re-rating, because it'll turn into a mixture of a conventional retail business and a property business. It could pave the way to a recovery. I mean, at least it's got a plan.
It does sound like it's got a plan.
It's a good start.
Better than it was a few weeks back.
Yeah.
I mean, we generally, you know, there's pub groups that we like.
We have tipped one
this week. I mean, the model there is largely managed.
Managed and franchised, actually.
Right.
This pub company, without giving too much of the game away, used to have a large tied estate, but it's been transferring a lot of it into these kind of novel franchise agreements, which was a complete innovation. But it means that it has some of the control that you get by wholly owning your outlets, but without the capital intensity.
Okay.
That's the idea anyway.
And it's a brewer as well.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting developments in the pub industry. We've still got one more beer left to taste before we move on to the next segment.
John.
This is the meantime Yakima Red. So,
recommended by Dominic.
Recommended
this one.
By Dom. Mm. Let's see what this one's like. There you go, Graham. Right, let's try this one, and then we can give our verdicts. Right. Yeah.
Nice. I think my favourite is the Brewdog.
My favourite is the Brewdog.
I'm a punk as well.
We're all punks, right? Yeah. We're punks at the IC. So there you go. Sorry, Meantime. It's good brewery though. Meantime, we do like it. It's a popular brew. I mean, it's an interesting development generally in the whole eating and drinking model, the premiumisation of stuff, and beer is no exception.
Cracking bar down at their brewery. Actually,
oh, have they?
And a restaurant.
It's fantastic.
Well.
Yeah. Gleaming copper vats.
Yeah. Very impressive.
Sounds like the IC day out.
Yes, there we go.
On the cards. Okay, fantastic. No, but as I said, it's interesting, this whole premiumisation. I think there's a large and growing segment of the consumer market that wants something a bit special, wants something a bit different, and prepared to pay a bit more for it. And I think all three of these beers are good.
Very nice. Yeah.
And this is the kind of thing that the industry's going towards. I mean, a good example of the results section this week of this premiumisation is Patisserie.
Yes. Patisserie Valerie,
yeah,
floated last year, not so long ago.
Very good headline from Ian.
What was the headline? I missed it.
Patisserie has its cake and beats it.
Oh,
it was from Alex.
Alex? Sorry, Alex.
Ian's got some good headlines in this week, actually. We'll come on to those in a bit. But, you know, Patisserie is a really great little business. It was valued quite lowly when it floated, and unsurprisingly has shot up since, as the trading's proved strong. An interesting one for investment bankers to consider when they're floating companies is that it's much better to come in at a lowish price and offer some growth than come in at a too high price and disappoint everybody. So just one to consider.
Yeah.
But so no, we like Patisserie, but it's an upmarket. It's an upmarket brand. That said, Greggs, who I don't know if we covered them this week, they're flying too, and they don't sell upmarket anything. that's a terrible thing because they always.
But they have been trying to, so that does show whether.
Well, yeah, yeah.
You know where the market's going.
Absolutely. But okay, so enough of sticky buns. Let's talk property because we've been talking beer.
Well, I was saying,
property.
Well,
let's talk commercial property.
Well, yeah, one of the obvious themes of the results season. In fact, there's an interesting link here because New River, which is a small property company that owns a lot of sort of second-rate shopping centres.
Yeah, you can say that again. I'd say third-rate.
And they probably they probably wouldn't disagree with you.
Yeah.
And that's the point. They like to buy cheap and sort of improve and get a few new tenants in and then sell. And they've been doing very well. But funnily enough, they did a deal with Marston's, another pub company, a couple of years ago, which has been a really where they bought a lot of second-rate pubs from Marston's, and they've been turning them into convenience stores and the like.
Mm.
And that's been that's been flying. It was a really good deal.
Yeah, so we had a bit of a bet about this, didn't we?
We did.
Which I've now paid in full.
Absolutely. Yes, John. A couple of years ago, when I was covering property, John bet me that New River wouldn't get beyond, I think, £2 or something.
£2?
Was it 180?
You're being generous.
I think it may have been 180. And yeah, it's now at 315p.
Mm, mm. Well, they bought a shopping centre near me, and it is a dive in my naivety.
You're being kind.
Yeah, I am being kind. I didn't see how this model had legs, especially at that point in the cycle.
Yeah, they floated in 2009 and then struggled for a couple of years, but the last couple of years their rise has been completely meteoric.
Yeah, I mean, it's about asset management, isn't it?
It's taking
the asset, squeezing the rent out of it.
Yeah,
and, they've done well. So I owe you a pint. Well, actually, I don't anymore. Just give it to you.
I'm enjoying it now. More readers may be familiar with British Land and Land Securities, the two biggest property companies in the UK on the FTSE, both of which reported their annual results this week, and very strong results from both, particularly Land Securities, which saw its NAV climb 28%.
That's amazing.
28%.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And so what's driving that?
Well, developments. So both Land Securities and British Land have, they both started their developments again in 2010.
Yep.
And that's been a real success. And Land Securities said that it had got to the peak of its construction cycle. It takes ages to get these developments going.
And so they've been building big office developments in London. So
yeah, I mean, the
Cheese Grater, for example.
The Cheese Grater is the British Land, or it's a joint venture British Land's involved with.
Walkie
Talkie is the one, the joint venture between Land Securities and Canary Wharf Group, owned by Songbird, which readers might be invested into. So the development portfolio was the biggest driver of these results, but also, particularly for Land Securities, the retail portfolio, slightly surprisingly, which has been the underperformer, did pretty well. And actually, that's what held British Land back, probably, relative to Land Securities. It's the fact that British Land owns a lot of Tesco superstores, and those, unsurprisingly,
haven't
been doing too well.
A couple of weeks ago,
yeah. But still, it has a lot of very good stuff as well. So,
Are these guys approaching the top of the cycle then? I mean, where are we with these?
Well, actually, Jonas has tried to answer that question in Property Matters. And he concludes that there's still some room left in the cycle. I mean, interesting, Land Securities, which has been, shall we say, more forthright in its willingness to call the cycle. Rob Noel there he came from Great Portland, which is a sort of more smaller and therefore slightly more flexible.
They had results this week.
They had results, pretty decent too. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, London property owners. It's funny. I mean, the regional market, shot into gear a couple of years ago, but the London ones hasn't really slowed down. Actually, there's a lot of construction going on now.
I saw something this week. The crane count is
soaring.
All time high.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of construction, and so there are the beginnings of the end, but it's still only very much the beginnings of the end, I think it's fair to say.
And I think it's fair to say, Stephen, that prior to your appointment as company's editor, your calling of the property market, the commercial property market, was spot on. I mean, we've nailed this one.
Yeah, we have. Actually, Jonas has done pretty well since taking it on in terms of picking up the mantle of that. He's made some good calls. So.
Okay. Commercial property. Some more gas in the tank there, potentially. But, done very well. Done very well indeed. What else have we had on the results front, Stephen? Any other biggies?
Well,
any other notable
3i
stuff?
Was an interesting one.
That one.
That was a underperforming for many years. This is a private equity company. A bit of a complex model. It has its own balance sheet, which it invests, but it also does asset management, invests other people's money as well. But anyway, it had a kind of completely unwieldy structure. But for the past 3 years, it has done extraordinarily well. And the shares have actually tripled over the past 3 years since Simon Borrows arrived as chief executive. And he's sort of reduced the headcount by 37%. I mean, really done quite a radical restructuring. And it's looking in pretty good shape. I mean, it's been helped by obviously improving markets over that period, and the results, the annual results were helped by strong market realizations, i.e. selling businesses. So that crystallizes a certain amount of the
value.
But
I guess the same market makes it difficult to buy new businesses as well. Prices,
yes,
it does, earlier in the cycle.
It does, and actually that's one of the reasons why we decided to downgrade the tip.
Right.
So it was a tip, it was a buy tip, and Ian Smith, our financials guy, we did debate this one at length and thought, although the market still looks very strong, we'd rather be cautious and put it onto a hold. We still think it's worth holding, but it's not really a buy anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, interestingly, we wrote a feature just before Christmas on the impact that management might have on a company's share price performance, and tried to put some numbers behind this. And Simon Borrows actually came out quite high on the list of successful chief executives based on the data that we were able to analyse. He does seem to have made an impression here and must be able to claim some of the credit above and beyond the market helping him out. I think it's quite interesting that as a case study in the value that good management can add, often disparaged for being paid too much, but sometimes they're worth it.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you, Stephen. That's good. Plenty more results in the magazine this week. Lots and lots of big companies that you might have heard of. Zoopla, Topps Tiles on the residential property side of things. Some big utilities.
Vodafone Talk.
Vodafone Talk on the comm side of things. Yeah. Very interesting market there. It's been a real challenge actually getting those out this week. 20 pages worth. So well done, Stephen. Well done.
No problem.
It was a good effort.
I won't say pleasure, but...
no, it definitely wasn't a pleasure.
It's always interesting.
But they're good to read. If you're an investor, I think it's you know, this is the time you want to be buying the mag and really getting a view on the market as a whole. We'll really start to see these big surges of reporting. When's the next one after this? Is it slowing down a bit next week?
Yeah, it's slowing down. I mean, it's still, you know, we've got 13 pages of results.
Still pretty chunky.
But yeah, no, it's slowing down. And then it really surges in late July.
Great. Look forward to it. Look forward to it. It's my summer holiday sorted. Okay. So I think that's it. I mean, there is absolutely loads in the magazine this week. We've taken a look at Centrica and its deals buying more gas from Russia and Norway. Chris Dillo's written lots on bonds this week. Very interesting state of affairs there. Chris is trying to really shed some light on that. I was quite interested in the transport bus regulation story, the regional bus regulation story, having endured some of the prices that bus tickets cost out in the stick. Interesting in a market ripe for a bit of action. Got you, stock screen, 14 recovery shares from Algy Hall there. I'll leave the personal finance content to the team for their podcast. But obviously the big story is the cover story, which is the top 50 ETFs. We do this every year. Really helping you understand, get to grips with the best products out there, the best passive products that you can literally build a whole portfolio out of without anything else. So thank you very much for listening. I'm sorry I couldn't share the beer with you over the airwaves, but I would strongly recommend all of these beers. BrewDog 5 AM Red Ale, our favourite. Yakima Red, actually not bad either.
Very nice,
quite similar. Chocolate Porter, a bit specialist, but quite nice too. So anyway, thank you for tuning in, and I'll see you all next week.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.